that's my biggest passion, is picking the right dog for you. I will never say there's no such thing as the wrong breed. It's just the wrong breed for you.
Exactly. But yeah, I definitely agree with that. You don't want people to go out and get dogs that they really don't know anything about. And it happens with every trend. You know, it happened with the Dalmatian movie with Dalmatians, right? That 101 Dalmatians, all of a sudden it spiked for Dalmatians to go up. And then you saw all these Dalmatians in shelters because they found out that Dalmatians really aren't great dogs for a lot of people. They're kind of buttholes. and then you get all the shepherd movies and stuff like that. So what does everybody do? Go get a shepherd. And then a lot of the good shepherds end up in shelters, and then a lot of the bad shepherds get bred. And then you just have this, now where we're at is a big diluted lineage of shepherds right now. I'm not going to say it's hard to find a good shepherd, but you have to do some really good homework in order to find one. And then you got the movie Max that came out. The Malinois spiked up from there. That was, 2 years ago? And then you got this, and then you got the dog that helped take down the ISIS leader. And then you're going to see spikes from there, you know. And it's always the trend. Oh, I should get one of those dogs. But no one ever reads behind the word, you know, hey, look at this picture of this dog. He looks cool. But he needs this. He needs this. He needs a job. He needs to, you know, he's needed to be stimulated constantly. You have to watch out for these issues. When you have this issue, you have to be able to do this, right? So people don't understand that. They think that, oh, it's cool. And then what happens? That Malinois gets diluted. And then we got a breed that is hard to find a good one. And that's what I'm starting to see with the Malinois. And I'm hoping that it doesn't happen to the Dutch Shepherd, but the Dutch Shepherd is a little bit less common than the Mal right now.
What branch of service were you?
Army.
I think you're the lone wolf in here.
Yeah, you guys didn't make great choices. It's okay, though.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
I'm Nevermore, and I'm not normally this pleasant sounding.
I'm Frosty, and I'm just a frozen asshole.
And that's right, you got DV Hoink, who loves to play and shit. I mean, no, wait a minute, hold on.
And they really didn't name y'all Asshole 1 and 2?
That's what the boss calls it.
Two people remember me, and one's folks, Mom.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
We were a little bit soggy.
Boiled bacon.
That's right.
And I'd like to introduce DV Midnight Backdoor for all your backdoor needs.
You know what that means.
We will talk really slow for you.
I don't know, some of those nights at work.
I'd say that's a different little bird.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out. And welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out. With me today, we have Uncle Fester, DV Oink, Frosty. His head fell off. He has a splitting migraine, so he's got to put his head in the freezer until he feels better. And with us today, we have Terry. And I am going to go ahead and start with Terry. Terry, where are you from? What you doing? What's your business?
How you doing? My business, where I'm from? I'm from Oakland, California, but at the moment we live in Atlanta, Georgia. Our business is Tactical Canine Approach, and we're a dog training business. We also supply dogs to protection and police homes.
That is awesome. So we talked getting to know Terry a little bit, but before we go into everything that he does, Oink, how you feeling?
Well, I'm here. it was one of those days coming home where I don't remember probably half the drive, so it was a little scary.
Yeah, and your counterpart there, I don't know why you like froze his head and caused him such a headache today, but you know, he'll be back. We'll Frosty will get well soon going into the Christmas season. I'm sure we all have a headache right now, but
too much Yellowstone.
Yeah. I told you to stop that. Uncle Fester, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm guessing that while they were peeing on planes, Oink probably, you know, maybe misted Frosty. Just a hair.
All righty. Yeah, you're so funny. So one thing that I want to put out there is one of the things that I think is the worst Christmas gift you could ever get somebody, unless you're donating them a service dog or something, is a puppy for Christmas. Because right after Christmas, the shelters get full and puppy is no longer wanted. So that's my biggest pet peeve. But we do have somebody here that understands a person's need. They actually specialize in placing the right person with the right dog for the right method. And Terry, tell us a little bit about what you do.
So what we do at Tactical Canine Approach is we train, we do a numerous amount of training between obedience, protection, detection, tracking, and then some sports stuff, as in protection sports and obedience sports. Biggest thing when it comes to finding a home for a dog, we specialize in that when it comes to the family. The reason why I say finding a home for a dog is because it's really getting the right match of the dog with the family rather than the other way around. Because everybody wants the dog that looks cool or
is in season or in the spotlight.
Exactly. And so they pick that dog instead of saying, is this dog the right one for me? For instance, some people love big dogs. That's perfectly fine to have a big dog. Now, there's numerous amount of big dogs that you can go out and pick that can meet your lifestyle. So if I'm a person that likes to, let's just say, hang out at home, I don't do too much exercise, and I do a little bit, I go walk every now and again, things of that nature, then I don't want to go and get something like a Doberman, a Rottweiler, things of that nature. The reason for it is because that dog's going to need a little bit more exercise than what I'm going to be able to give it, right? Because it's in the working dog category. So our biggest thing is we want dogs to go to homes and it be a forever home. We don't ever want to send a dog to a home and then get a call back. It's just not the right fit. Now, don't get us wrong. We understand that we're going to get that kind of, we're going to get that sometime. And excuse the noise in the back. That's my
puppy. That's perfectly fine. We've recorded numerous shows because we do have two dogs in the house. We have Skeeter, the Alaskan Malamute, and we have my little insane Pibble. She's not really insane. She's just, it's like you were just saying, if you don't know that breed, for about 2.5 years, they're very much puppy and they're very much toddler-like. So if you want something that you can train within the first year and it be perfect, she's not your girl.
Yeah, totally understand. Yeah, so we our biggest thing is we want dogs to be in forever homes, and if we can pick you the right dog, if you give us a chance to pick you the right dog, then we guarantee that we can get you the dog that's going to be the dog that you keep forever. We've only had one dog ever returned, and really it wasn't the fit of the dog. It was just a family situation that occurred, a change in family living style. So with that being said, please, please, please don't go out and just buy dogs just because it's the hottest topic at the moment, because then you'll lose interest. And if you do happen to find yourself with a dog that you feel may not be the dog for you, seek out professional help. Definitely want to do that. Obedience goes a long way. The sooner the better. If you start off with a puppy and do obedience, it's a lot better than a dog that's 2, 3, 4 years old. But that does not mean if you have a 2, 3, 4 year old dog not to go get obedience training. It just means start as soon as possible if you can, but the stipulation is wrong. When they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, you really can. And you can fix a lot of behaviors from an old dog also. It just takes more time.
Well, I'm also a firm believer in the bond, and you can do that bond. I actually a couple years back rescued, there was a puppy mill. And I went up to the event when they finally adopted them, and there were only two poodles left. And one was 13 and one was 15. Nobody wanted them because of their age. And they lived in little tiny crates on top of milk cans outside. They were terrified of the whole world. It probably took me 6 months before I could even get them to step on grass because they had never been in grass before. So you can adopt at any age, but a 14-year-old poodle isn't going to meet the needs of, like, say, a protection dog. They're just too old. But, I mean, they're smart. They learned a lot. Unfortunately, they both passed away, but, you know, they learned how to be a dog, and they could sit, and they did all that. So I don't think it's ever too late to train them. I do know that once in a while, there are glitches. We've had somebody that lost their service dog. He had to be put down for aggression, but they found out there was swelling in the brain that was causing it. Like, there was no cure for it.
Oh, wow.
I really just don't like the whole, well, that's an aggressive dog. It doesn't belong to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
There's a perfect person out there that can fix that dog. If they're I hate the word unfixable unless you've tried everything. That bothers me.
Exactly. Definitely agree on that. Every dog can have a job. There's been numerous dogs that we find in shelters that we have rehomed. We've taken in previous clients who have had living changes that they had to give up their dog and rehome their dogs. You know, a lot of dogs that are aggressive that a lot of people see aren't really aggressive. They're more reactive and going through reactivity because it's a learned behavior, something they learn that gets them out of a uncomfortable situation early on. Right. So, with that being said, you know, that doesn't mean that dog is hopeless. There's a trainer that can help out with that. It's just all about taking that time to go and get that done. A lot of times what we see as trainers, what we see is people don't want to take the time to do the training. We get people that, you know, we live in a society where it's a fast way of
instant gratification.
Exactly. So, like McDonald's, you know, you go through drive-thru, you expect your food less than 5 minutes, right? And dog training doesn't work that way. it's something that takes time. It takes some patience. Reason why dog trainers are as good as they are is because of patience. And as long as you try and you have that patience and that will to get your, make your dog better, then you can definitely do it. It's simple. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it is something that if you have professional help, someone that knows what they're doing, that they can walk you through it, or they can show you how to do it without an issue. But it's all about patience. I teach interns, and that's one of the biggest things I teach my interns in the beginning is patience. So, you know, you can't rush it, because when you rush it, you miss steps. When you miss steps, the process goes longer rather than shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So where we could have fixed a dog within 3 to 4 weeks, now maybe it's going to take us 5 to 6 because we skipped a couple of steps, right? But this is a living being just like us. We don't learn just overnight. We learn it, then we have to practice, right? And it has to become muscle memory. I know that we're all military, so we all, the best way to describe that is is shooting. Right. When you're shooting, you have to go through all the fundamentals. You didn't go out and shoot one time and say, oh, I'm perfect at this. Now, there are some people who have a natural talent for it, but they're still not perfect. In order to become perfect and become one of the greatest shooters, you have to take your time and you have to go through those fundamentals and you have to have repetition. So that way you build muscle memory. So when things hit the fan, you always go back to muscle memory. It's the same thing with teaching a dog. We put all these repetitions in, so then that way when that dog hears, so for instance, an example, we tell that dog sit. That dog hears sit, he knows, or she knows, oh, I'm going to get a treat for that.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm going to get some love for that. So it's muscle memory. if I put my butt to the ground, I immediately get some sort of gratification from this, right? And with that being said, it takes patience, it takes time, and hard work. So what I do recommend is, if you did get a Christmas puppy or are getting a Christmas puppy for someone, the same time you give them that puppy, give them some training.
So, talk about that muscle memory and stuff. So you're saying, like, you know, going out and firing my 1911 is nothing like going out and firing, you know, my AR-15, because of, like, breeds of dog, kind of the same thing. You're going to have a different way of handling the caliber of the weapon versus, you know, the caliber of the dog. And it's, you know, like you said, it's a living thing, for crying out loud, people. I mean, it's not like it's, you know, an AR-15 is an AR-15 is an AR-15. Each one's going to have its own little pull, its own little, you know, trajectory when it comes out that barrel. So, you know, each weapon is handled differently, just like each dog is going to be handled differently. And I think that's something I think you keyed on.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not against getting a puppy. That's not what I mean. It's the same at Easter. Everybody gets a bunny, and then bunny gets forgotten after 3 to 4 weeks, or they forget that, you know, the 3-year-old can't actually take care of bunny, and you end up having to do it. So all I'm saying is, if you're going to go out, adopt, I prefer adoption, but, you know, or buy a dog, make sure that you understand what you're going to be in for the long run. They're cute, but cute grows, and cute gets bad habits, and cute learns to poop in the house or chew on the furniture, and you've got to know how to fix cute back into, you know. And it was like you were saying earlier, you know, if you're a couch potato, and there's nothing wrong with that, if you chill, you work all the time, you really can't put a dog that has high energy in a kennel and not expect to come home and half your house is eaten.
Exactly. That is very true.
You know, there's a lot of breeds out there that everybody's like, well, I just saw that in the news. So, and I've seen that happen recently. It happened, and everybody I know got that dog. And I'm like, I hope you know what you're doing, because that dog is capable of eating a police car. I've seen it. So I hope you know that there's work in there, you know, unless you're walking that dog, jogging that dog, you've got a yard. And I don't mean throw it in the yard and call it a day, because that's not going to work for them either. They're really smart and they get out.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. It's before I got my first Malinois, if I'm not mistaken, it was 4 years of research before I got my first one. I researched this dog a lot. I was told about them. I've seen the Malinois and worked with the Malinois and stuff like that, and was recommended to him by my uncle, who's my mentor, who taught me 85% of everything that I know when it comes to dogs. And before the Malinois, I was into pit bulls. The original pit bull, the small, you know, the ones that they used to fight around the, you know, those lines of pit bull, the working pit bull. Now when it came to those dogs, you know, you had a lot of natural dog aggression and things of that nature, and it's something that takes a lot of time to work out of them, and it's never all the way out per se, but it is something that can be manageable, that can be managed. And when I started getting away from the pit bull because of the perception of the public, and I still kept a couple, but I just got away from training and doing a lot of training and things of that nature with them personally and selling them. And I got out of them, and I was like, you know, I want to look into my next dog. And so my uncle told me, hey, look into the Malinois. And the biggest thing with my next dog, I wanted it to be just like a pit bull. I wanted it to be the same stature. I wanted it to be very athletic. I wanted it to be, I wanted it to go, 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 go. But I wanted it also to be very loyal. I wanted it to be, when it came to me as a handler, I wanted it to respect me. And I wanted to have a mutual respect for the dog also, right? Biggest thing is, when I looked at that, this dog was perfect. You know, one thing that I've grown up listening to was always they would say, you know, in order to get if you teach a pit bull to be a protection dog, it's going to take a lot to get this dog off of someone, right? Mm-hmm. It, you know, when it's protecting its family, you know, it's going that the bad guy is going to have to do a lot to get this dog to stop. So I wanted a dog just like that, that was going to mimic that dog. And so when I looked into the Malinois, it was the perfect match. Only thing different was long hair, and they have a lot more energy than the pit bull. You know, I put my dogs up after running them, swimming them, running them, putting them on the slat mill to run, doing some bite work, doing some, you know, throw the ball, doing some obedience, and I can put them up 5-10 minutes. They're already back up, ready to go again. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the dog that they are. And it's perfect for my lifestyle because it always keeps me going. And that's what I, and that's the person that I am, right? Now, as I get older, I'll probably start transitioning into into something a little bit less energetic. But it's definitely, that's the kind of lifestyle I live now, right? But mm-hmm. I have an intern who doesn't live that kind of lifestyle, right? He's a little bit more on the go. He's athletic and everything, but he's not as active. And so the things that he likes is a bigger type of dog. So he decided to go with a Cane Corso.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. I'm sorry, I just don't have the energy for that.
So I forgot, you know, us Americans, we say Cane Corso, it's Cane Corso. You know, and those are beautiful dogs. They're big. They range around 160. I think females around 90 to 120. You know, real, real nice dogs, but naturally defensive, like all Mastiffs, right? So they don't have the prey drive. They don't have really high prey drive like the Malinois. So, you know, going out and doing ball for 45 minutes is not in that dog's vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you know, that dog's more, and they're a lot more chill, you know, and that meets his lifestyle, right? Now, will I recommend that dog to grandma that's 56? No, I won't, because it's a huge dog for her to handle, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm also not going to recommend a Malinois to grandma either. I'm going to go somewhere like along like the poodle, or you know, the poodle or a lab or something around there.
I don't know, unless grandma's like a professional kickboxer or marathon runner or something, and she, you know. But I get what you're saying. I try to make people understand when they go on, I'm trying to pick a dog, and I'm like, make sure you know that breed. And, you know, and we're not talking about all the myths. Not, yeah, my little Pibble probably, if I was attacked, would defend me. But for the most part, she's a big baby. Like, she's the most loving, chill. She spends 95% of her life upside down, because I don't know why. It's what she is. But she's usually flipped on her back, big old smile. Now, she's high energetic. Don't get me wrong. Them zoomies will put her head through a door, because she's built like the old school. She's very squat, so she's very low, mm-hmm. but she's massive. She's solid. She's probably 70 pounds, but there's no fat on her. But when she gets to going, she can knock your legs out from under you. And that's what I try to explain to people. We also have the Alaskan Malamute. That is one of the most stubborn breeds of dogs. And if you do not speak his language, that dog will not listen to you. I don't care who you are. If you do not speak that particular breed's language, it doesn't work.
Oh, you know,
I see a lot of the alpha theories and stuff like that, and I'm prone to not – I don't really agree with it. I think it's all in the dog's personality, but I'm telling you, this dog has looked me dead in my face when I've said no and looked at me like, yeah, okay, I'm really going to listen to you. And I had to learn that I had to be the leader, and there's a certain way you tell him no, and he'll go do it. Now, he's mm-hmm. hilarious when he gets busted or whatever, because – I don't care. People say they don't have emotions and stuff. His dog mimics human emotions. He's got a sense of humor. He pulls pranks, but stubborn. Oh my goodness. I told him, I said, if I had to pick any dog, it would not have been, I mean, he's a fabulous service dog. Don't get me wrong. When it comes to work, this dog knows what the hell he's doing. And he's got just enough stubbornness in him to give disobedience when it's needed. The story that he always tells about it is when we were together at the grocery store and I'd done had enough. So me and him went outside. Well, a lady got in my face and just kept going, well, you're not disabled. You don't look disabled. How are you disabled? And I finally just had had enough and I lunged for her. Well, he got me by the back of my pants. Did not bite me to hurt me, but he did grab me and snatch me back. And I'm standing there blinking, you know, because I had that moment. And I'm like, did you just grab me? And he comes out and I was like, your dog grabbed me by the seat of my britches because I was going to go nail that lady. And he goes, and I was like, that is not a task. And he's like, no, but they are trained for, you know, he is the type of dog where he does in the moment. He knows what's best for me, even when I don't know what's best for me. But I can't promise I've seen a lot of Malamutes out there on, you know, like on the YouTube and stuff like that. And they're not all like that. You know, mm-hmm. Some of them have a very high prey drive. So, it takes a lot to keep this guy from wanting to hunt deer and wanting to hunt coyote. You know, he doesn't like it, but sometimes he has to be leashed to go potty in the yard because he picks that day to think that, you know, he's a young buck and he should be chasing deer.
Oh, yeah.
But now I am very interested, and there are, I didn't know this until recently, there are competitions for protection training and so forth, right?
Yes.
All right. So we've only got like 6 minutes left in this, so I'm not going to go into that. But you also said you do you train police dogs?
Yes.
That is pretty awesome. So what kind of dog do you generally put for police? I know there's the top breeds, the Malinois, the Shepherd, the Dutch Shepherd. But what do you do when an agency comes looking to, hey, we need a canine police dog?
So it depends on what kind of dog they're looking for. You get some agencies that don't want a dual purpose, which is a detection and a patrol dog, which is where that protection part comes into, right? You get some people that don't want that. They just want a single purpose dog. So they can still go with a Malinois if they wanted, or a Shepherd or a Dutch Shepherd. But some other dogs that a lot of people didn't know that are also police dogs, you have the Lab, you have the German Shorthair Pointer. I've seen Springer Spaniels.
I've seen Beagles at the airport.
You got Beagles for TSA. They're actually pretty common for TSA. So there's many different dogs that can be a police canine. It just all depends on the purpose of the dog. So when that department comes and says, you know, or that broker comes and says, hey, I need these kind of dogs, then we look for those kind of dogs. If we don't have them, or if we do have them, then, you know, cause we do supply Labs, we do supply Mals and Shepherds and Dutch Shepherds. And so we look at what they're looking for and seeing if that fits the need. Of course, we can't teach a Lab to be a protection dog or a dual purpose dog. He has to be a single purpose dog. They were bred not to bite hard.
Yeah, I was gonna say they don't have the bite the pressure that would be needed, and they would end up getting hurt and thrown around.
Exactly. So that wouldn't necessarily work. But we do teach them to track. So there's plenty of labs that have found criminal suspects, and you know they tracked up to them, and then of course their human partner has to then take over from there. But funny story, I have a buddy who's a canine handler, and he has a Lab. They were tracking up to a murder suspect, and they got to the guy. The guy was hiding in behind some bushes in a crawl space of a house, and dogs barking, 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 and and there he's giving announcements like this dog is a dual purpose dog. And guy comes running out. No, don't send the dog, please don't send the dog. And he gets out and he's like, oh dang it. And because he saw that it's a lab and not a shepherd or a Dutch shepherd or a Malinois. So he gave up to a dog that would have probably, if it was sent in there, went in there and licked all on him.
Well, I I've always said this, some of the worst bites I've ever I've ever gotten that actually did massive damage has been from a smaller type of breed. So don't let their size fool you, but the whole point is they're better for tracking, or they're better for bomb sniffing, or they're just not made with the bite strength. And they're not, I mean, they're big, but they're not as solid as a shepherd or something would be, that they can't be just, flung. But with that, we're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Frag Out, Drag Out. You're listening to Frag Out, Drag Out on DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio. The holiday season isn't always about physical gifts. Sometimes it is more than that. So during this holiday season, give to dvfarm.org. The DV Farm in Gilsum, New Hampshire is dedicated to helping addicted and homeless veterans get their lives back on track. Help them and let them know that they have a purpose and they are not alone. They watched your six when they volunteered. Now you can watch their six. Give to dvfarm.org today.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio free of charge.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
Radio. And welcome back to Frag Out, Drag Out. Still got Nevermore, still got Oink, still got Uncle Fester, and Terry is still with us. And we've kind of, got into the basics of how he believes in, placing. It's refreshing to hear somebody not try to, just because they love Malinois or they love this or they love that, to push it off onto somebody because that's what they think. They making sure it suits the needs, because there's nothing worse than getting that phone call, this dog didn't work out. So that I'm glad of, but I am going to give Oink and Uncle Fester a time to see if they have any questions, because I could talk about dogs all day and give them time to talk.
Well, I was just going to mention that our lovely show here, Frag Out Drag Out, is brought to us by the lovely folks over at Key Bar Soap Company. When it comes to the companies out there to provide men a way to cleanse themselves, to smell like a man.
And girls.
And girls, don't get me wrong, but it's even fewer that can provide these products in all natural options. So, ditch the bar, grab a grenade, check out K-Bar Soap Co., not only on Facebook, but they're kbarsoapco.org, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I apologize if I got that wrong, but definitely check out their Facebook page and give them a shot, because I tell you what, it's a great product, it's all natural, and they also have beard grooming things for, that special Santa Claus in your life. Our other sponsor, of course, is NFG Vets. NFG Vets is owned and operated by a team of veterans whose sole purpose is to provide active duty and veteran communities a place to be themselves. So get on over there to the Facebook page, NFG Vets. Check them out. Usually post some pretty funny memes and whatever else you have out there, topic of the day. So check our sponsors out. Give them some love. Terry, the only thing I really had is some of the myths out there. Some believe that, the male dog is more affectionate and easier to train, while the female dog is more aggressive and protective of its owners. Have you noticed any of that? Is it any truth to this stuff, or is that just kind of stuff that people are assuming and it's made up?
So when it comes to the female dog being more protective of its owner, it is true. When you look at a pack of dogs, the female it's the female's job to take care of the puppies and protect the pack. And then you have the males. Of course, you know, you got your males. They're there to be the muscle for big disputes. That's why you get a lot of times when your dog, if it's not neutered, it starts to venture out. Right? What is he doing? He's adding on to his territory. So it's a little bit tougher. Now, in my case, my female is very affectionate to everybody. She is a protection dog. She is a Belgian Malinois. And I mean, anybody that comes out, kids, people, and other animals, she's super affectionate to, with no hesitation. But she will definitely flip that switch over in a heartbeat.
And I want to jump in there really quick with another myth while you're in that subject. People think that protection dog means aggression. That means that as soon as you walk up to a protection dog, you're going to get bit. So can you please explain to them what you mean by if you flip that switch?
So, like I said, with Tiny, she's super affectionate. Anybody can come up to her and she'll literally jump in your arms for you to pet her. If you're sitting down, she's going to put her head on your lap for you to pet her. But when I say flip that switch, that's when she turns into, if you are being threatening towards me, my kids, or anybody that's immediate friends, she's going to then turn on, right? When I say turn on, she's going to then get into her protective mode, right? A lot of people think that... A lot of people think that protection dogs, that they have to be on 24/7. That's not true. We train our dogs to be very social, right? We want our dogs to be able to be approached by anyone, because if you've also heard another myth there's another myth out that, oh, if you ever hear someone say, I have a protection dog, if you ever hear them say that they have to put their protection dog up, it is not a proper protection dog.
Exactly. Because there is a command, correct? You do have a solid command. I'm not going to ask you what it is, because every dog has a different command. I don't want people walking up to dogs just trying to get them to. But there is a command to issue to, unless you're in immediate danger or there's an immediate threat, there is a command to flip that switch.
Yes. There is. And then there's cues. So what we do is we train dogs to see facial cues, dogs read a lot of body language, right? They don't just go after, oh, that guy is running at me with this hammer. It's not that. It's the facial cue that this guy is coming to them, right? It's the body posture that they're coming in a threatening manner. And then it's also the body posture of the owner, right? If I have a protection dog, I'm confident, but when I'm in trouble, I lean onto my dog to protect me. So that's when I'm going to try to take my step away. So if my dog's on leash, I want my dog going forward and I'm going backwards. That's telling my dog, hey, I'm scared of this situation, right? For instance, a good example is, when someone has a dog that they're not sure of and they think their dog is a little dog aggressive and the dog really is just reactive. But what does that person do? They clench onto their leash and make the leash. What that does is everything goes down leash. So dog immediately says, oh, my owner is scared. I need to protect my owner. Right. Which cause in that sense causes a bad reaction. Now in protection, that's a good reaction. Because that's where we're indicating to the dog, hey, I'm scared for my life. I need you to protect me. And then once the dog starts to do that. He bites and he holds. Then that gives me a chance to either do A, call the police, B, pull out my weapon so that way I can take over the situation, but the biggest thing is so I can de-escalate the situation, whichever way that is. If I need to get away, pull out my weapon, or call the police, right? When it comes to a protection dog, you definitely have to have that on and off switch. If you don't have that, it's not necessarily a protection dog. It's more of a nuisance and a menace to society, because at any time that dog is uncontrollable. It's a bully that's not being checked.
Absolutely. I do like that you said that, because people are under the, like I said, they're under the misconception that if that is a protection dog, you should never walk up to a strange dog. I don't care who you are, what kind of dog lover you are, because it's not about the dog, because it's not the dog's fault. If the owner has not put the effort into it, or if the owner has taught that dog to be a bully or allowed that dog to be a bully, everybody always says that's a bad dog. No, that is a good dog with a bad human. I'm sorry, but I don't think dogs are just, like I said, there are issues. Sometimes they have things in their brain and there is a problem, but 95% of a dog is how it was raised. It didn't just, pop out of the litter and decided it was going to be a horrible murder doggy, And I always tell people, they feel what is in the leash. Like my girl, she's still, she's not even hit 2 years yet, so she's still got a lot of training to do, but she feels my anxiety and I know it, and I make her anxious, and I'm having to learn how to stop, making her anxious because I'm anxious, and get her to take over instead of becoming anxious. Comfort me. But that's what I hate about the whole, I have nothing against protection dogs if they're trained right. And it definitely sounds like you know exactly what you're talking about. But some people go, well, I trained him, so if somebody busts in my house, and I'm like, all you did was create a dog that barks and bites. It's not protection trained. Means you put effort into it and they actually have commands and they, like you said, cues,
Yep. And it's funny, a lot of times people think that because their dog barks on the other side of the fence at people that walk by or at people that ring the doorbell and things of that nature, that's a protection dog. It's not necessarily true.
Dogs that don't bark at all is a cue.
Definitely. And
you can hear that damn cheese wrapper from across the damn house. I tell you what.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, a lot of people think that, and my biggest thing is, when it comes to a protection dog, a lot of dogs naturally are going to be good deterrents. If you look at statistically, you're less likely to get your house broken into if you have a dog that's barking inside that house. Because no one knows what that dog is behind there. I have a dog that sounds like it's a Chihuahua and he's about 65 pounds and you wouldn't even know it until you went on the other side of that door and saw. And so no one that's going to do anything wrong wants to deal with that kind of situation. I'd rather just go to a house that has no one in there.
Exactly. And I don't even care if it's a small dog. Those little suckers can tear your ankles up. I don't care what anybody says,
I have a total of 16 bites that I've had, and 10 of them came from small dogs. Mm-hmm. Between beagles, chihuahuas, yorkies, shih tzus, poodles, you name it, small dogs. And they're usually the worst bites, to be honest, that I've experienced. And most trainers that I know, we talked about this, and they say the same thing. Small dogs are usually the ones that are the fastest to bite you, and they're usually the worst biters.
And they usually tear more meat. I'm sorry, but a big dog, while it does crush, it literally just puts holes in your skin versus tear out the flesh. It puts holes and they hold more. And I've noticed small dogs tend to like grab and pull back and rip everything out. Now, another thing that I'm really interested in is I've noticed a big trend in people with search and rescue dogs. Now, do you go about training those?
I do the foundational work, but I don't certify search and rescue dogs. I help out in the foundation side of it. And then what I would do from there is I send you off to a actually certified rescue team and have them get you the rest of the training that you would need to certify. And then usually, you know, people go off and they certify with that team and then become part of that team. But I don't do the certifying and I don't do all of it. Reason for it is because some of the places that they have available to them, I don't have that capability.
Exactly.
Right? But when it comes to the foundational parts, which is not going to say everything's the same, but for the most part, it is close to each other. There's a couple of little tweaks here and there that some people do that other people don't. But foundationally, we can get you there, and then they can take you the rest of the way from there.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot involved with search and rescue because, you know, not everybody thinks it's just tracking, but sometimes that means they're in the water. Sometimes that, and, you know, not every facility is going to have a jungle in their backyard to take them through those type of scenarios.
Or big old piles of rubble, you know, everybody's not able to get to be able to put people in those situations to help train those things.
Now, I have personally, when I was in the service, I have been in a bite suit, and I have felt the rocket of a dog when they latch onto the bike suit. And I don't care how much padding, how much you got, you are not prepared for the force of that hit. Those dogs are like, I don't know how to explain it other than it's like getting slapped upside the head with Thor's hammer when they lunge. But now I want to talk more about the competitions. I've seen videos of it, and our friend had two Rotties that did the competition training, and it's a little bit more than just going, give them bite command, they jump. Can you tell us a little bit about what those kind of competitions, if you're involved in that, what that's like?
So a couple of competitions that I'm involved in that I can only really talk about what I know. And that's going to be PSA, Protection Sport Association. And that's a protection sport. Then you have IGP. That's another protection sport. You have French Ring. That's another one. I always say this wrong. ADDPA, ADPPA.
It's okay. We got what you mean.
But there's numerous out there. But with the sports that I participate in, the biggest thing is their focuses, right? So everybody has their different focuses. Some you have to do protection, obedience, and tracking. Some you just have to do obedience and protection, right? But every sport is always going to have some sort of obedience, which is what should happen. You want to have a sport that hones in, that zeroes in on obedience, because control is a big thing. No one wants to ever teach a dog that is just a attack dog, right? When people say that, it's one of like it's like ear screeching to me, because I don't teach an attack dog, I teach a protection dog. And then when we teach sport dogs, it's the same thing as a protection dog. Only thing is now that dog sees more equipment, right? And that dog goes through more scenarios. So a lot of times our sport dogs go through, it's amazing some of these scenarios that some of these competitions come up with, because some of these competitions come up with some stuff that, you know, you got this guy, he's in this suit that you've been trained to bite. I'm the dog, right? This guy's in front of me. He's in the suit that I've been trained to bite since I was a puppy. And he's yelling at me. He's screaming at me. He's doing everything threatening that, you know, that deserves him to, that says, hey, he should be bitten, right? He's being threatening. He's throwing stuff at me, all this stuff. And then but I have to stay by my handler's side and walk and not bite, right? I have to walk by my handler's side and not bite. I have to do every command my handler is asking me to do and not bite. The level of control for these dogs is amazing. And I recommend that if anybody ever is interested in a protection dog, to biggest thing is go see one of these sports, because you would see how much training comes into these dogs, because you have and you'll see how important it is to have that obedience factor, that control. And that's really what a sport dog is. A sport dog is going to have about 10 times more control than a protection dog is. And the reason for it is because the sport dog is going to go through so many things that's going to tell him the opposite of what protection is going to say, right? Mm-hmm. Usually in your beginner levels of most of these sports, it's really realistic, as in when it relates to protection. But once you start getting into the higher levels, it gets a little bit less realistic. It gets more into the control factor, because you're telling this dog, hey, this guy, he's running at you, but you can't go bite him. You know, this guy, he grabbed your dad, but you can't go bite him.
Yeah. Now, so one thing I'm all about, and sorry to interrupt, but I'm all about owner training, like for service dogs, with guidance. But when somebody, and this is my cringe moment, when somebody says that they are self training a protection dog with no expertise whatsoever, and you know, they just got a dog and they decided this is what they were going to do and they've never done it before, I literally get fearful, not that I'm going to get bit, but I get fearful at this point for society, because to me, when you're going to do a protection dog, you need guidance. It's not, like you said, as simple as one bite command and, you know, a ferocious bark. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that, you know, I say you need to have, and if anything, you need to at least go to a professional trainer that does this type of work and either be taught with the dog or taught how to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that worries me, because I've heard that a lot recently, because protection training is now a fad. I hate to say that, but, mm-hmm. and would you not agree that you just shouldn't, if you've never trained a dog even how to sit, go out there and say, oh, I'm going to start protection training by myself?
Definitely, because what's going to end up happening is you're going to get yourself hurt. Are you going to get your dog hurt, or are you going to do something worse and get someone else hurt, right? Biggest thing is, when it comes to protection, you have to go and seek help. First off, it's not possible to train a protection dog by yourself. It's not. I get people all the time that ask me the same thing. What can I do to further this dog along? There's nothing you can do. Because it takes a village to make a protection dog. You know,
you can't control him and be in a suit too.
Exactly. And then when you're doing that, you're building a lot of conflict and things of that nature. You know, just like there's a certain period when I'm training my puppies, I have to then step away from being a decoy, because what happens is they then look at me and they're like, well, why am I biting you? Right. And then
I never even thought of it like that.
And then what happens is, you know, if you do so happen to, somehow happen to luck up and train a protection dog, and actually have a protection dog, the issue you get from there is, now who does that dog respect? Because you just taught this dog to bite you. And then when he can't go bite someone he feels he should be biting, but you say that he can't, how do you keep him from redirecting to you? Because now, because he's grown up learning that, well, I can bite you and that's okay, right? You're telling me I can't go bite him, but you did tell me that I could bite you and that's okay. So now you get all these conflicts and issues. So if you're looking to have a protection dog, I definitely recommend that you seek professional help. But with that being said, when it comes to a protection dog and getting protection training, also make sure you do research on the person you have trained your dog.
Exactly.
There's tons of methods out here to train these dogs, but there is only one method for your dog. Every dog is different. Every dog can't fit into that training style. I'm not saying that, you know, it can't, but it just isn't. You have to make sure you go to the one that you're comfortable with, that your dog is comfortable with, and you have to make sure that you are consistent. But also check the credibility and of the trainer itself. If you have a trainer, and I hate to say this, but if you have a trainer who says, I have a protection dog, but you can't see it because it's a protection dog, it's not a good trainer to go to. Every trainer that I know that has a protection dog that they've trained, and me also, you can meet our dog. You can pet our dog. Our dog will go up to you and let them pet you and stuff like that. Some of our dogs won't, you know, not necessarily saying that they're going to go after you, but they just don't like being pet by other people. And that's a personal preference. I mean, heck, I don't like being hugged by everybody, but
exactly.
But you know, my intern, he loves hugging everybody. So it's just, everybody has their own preference on how they deal with certain things. Right. So we kind of, when I say that, you want a sociable dog. It doesn't mean it's a dog that has to be touched. It just means it's a dog that can be in society and not be a nuisance. You know, it can be under control and it's not being, you know, reactive to everybody and everything. Right. But those are the people that you want to get your dogs trained from. You don't want to do it yourself, and you don't want to go to people who tell you that your protection dog can't be social.
Yeah, and there's also, and without going into gear and stuff, because that does turn certain people away. That's not what I'm talking about. But there is also a big difference between abuse and control. Yes. And if somebody is training your dog and they kick the living squat, they punt their dog halfway across the room because it didn't do what they said, that's abuse. They're, like, yes. I said, we're not going to get into the gear, but some people use gear that redirects their attention, and that's their method of training. I'm not saying that's wrong, but there's a fine line between punching your dog in the face and or kicking them and actual corrective gear.
Exactly. That is very true. You definitely, I'm when it comes to gear, I'm totally for every aspect of training, as long as it works for that particular dog. Like I said before, it's all about that dog. Everybody's different. Everybody learns a different way. I'm a visual learner. You may be a person that can read a book and immediately have whatever is being taught, right? Where I had to see it happen. You definitely hit that on the head. There's a difference between using tools to train dogs and physically abusing dogs to get what you want. We don't do the physical abuse at all. We try to use whatever we can use to help that dog get to where he needs.
Well, we're about out of time. So before we do run out of time, if people are interested in what you do, or they have questions, or like you said, you help match a dog to their needs. So if they're wanting a dog for whatever particular reason and need your expertise, where can they find you at?
So they can find us at Tactical Canine Approach. That's going to be .com. That's going to be K, the letter K, the number 9, Approach. So Tactical, the letter K, the number 9, Approach.com. We do travel, so we're based in Atlanta, but we do pick up around the United States. We pick dogs up all the way to California, New York, Florida, Texas. We've gotten a dog from Missouri. So we also deliver, we transport, and then the services that we offer are obedience, protection, detection, tracking, and then we also offer puppy programs. We offer dog evaluations, you know, but if you contact us at tacticalcanineapproach.com, you can see us. You can also look at us on Instagram and Facebook. by just putting in tactical canine approach.
And he said something before we started recording. If you have made a mistake and gotten a dog, such as a Dutch Shepherd or something, or any dog, and you have realized that you've made a horrible mistake, you can also contact these guys and they will go about helping keep this dog from going to a shelter. I hate the word wash. Don't wash the dog. Don't sell it short because it's not doing what you want it to. You just may not be the right person to get it to do what it needs to do. So he's also said that he's done that because, like I said, I've seen a lot of Belgian Malinois and Dutch Shepherds here lately who look at my new puppy and I'm going, oh, Lord. So he does offer that. I'm not saying he can automatically just drive to California and pick up your poodle. But if you get a dog that you thought was going to be something else, please contact these guys. I don't like seeing them end up in shelters, especially when they can get a new leash on life, pardon the pun, and actually serve a purpose. So, Fester, do you have any parting remarks?
Well, I wanted to thank Terry for joining us today. We played phone tag pretty much the last week or two, and I'm glad he agreed to come on and join us and give us some insight.
Thank you.
The only thing I think I have is if you're in the process of training your dog, which is something that, you know, never stops, make sure you don't use cheese wrappers or have them anywhere near you.
Man, they cannot hear you calling their name when they want to ignore you, but be darned if you open a snack and they ain't standing there looking at you like, hello. And Terry, seriously, thank you. I'm always wary just because I am in the service dog community and I deal with a lot of, and I'm using quotation marks, trainers. It is refreshing to see somebody not just pawn off a dog because they think that, you know, that is what you need, that you take all that consideration, because I like looking at people's turnover rates, and it sounds like that you are pretty successful in ensuring that you're not going to have a turnover rate. Like you said, sometimes things happen, and you know, or you know, what if that person moves? And unfortunately, there are still people with terrible, terrible restrictions and breed bans and stuff. And personally, I wouldn't move there, but you know, that's just me. You know, something happens.
Same here.
Especially if you're like, you know, active duty and you've had this loyal dog and then suddenly something happens, you know, I get that. But, you know, and I do appreciate it. Very knowledgeable. I didn't know as much about protection training. I've seen it and whatever. But thank you for dispelling some myths and for taking the time to, you know, not just go, well, I'm getting paid, so here's your dog, here you go. And if it works, it works. Good luck.
I do appreciate it.
All right, with that, you have been in our holiday small veteran business. And by the way, he was Army since I never got that around. So y'all can boo him later. No, I'm kidding.
Great choices.
But anyway, for our holiday season, it's probably going to continue because my phone's blowing up with all kinds of small businesses. It seems like everybody likes, you know, having guests and not just hearing us talk to ourselves for an hour every time. So with that, you've listened to Frag Out Drag Out on DV Radio, WDVR. Thank you. Bye-bye. DV Radio.